Okay. I'd like to give some insight of geodynamics, but in the inner core. As we have a few constraints, I will try to use all constraints we have as an input. Namely, we have seismological constraint. We have seen that this morning. Mineralogical and geochemical, and I will try to put all of them to build a geodynamical model in order to explain this. So this is my outline. I will be fast on the beginning. Seismological evidences we have seen them this morning, and this is what we would like to explain. One very important thing is to explain why the uppermost inner core is not anisotropic, is isotropic. So if the inner core, this is a direct model of anisotropy, which has been done by Aino Alanko, which is doing her PhD in Grenoble. If you suppose that the inner core is like this, in terms of anisotropy of P wave velocity, then if you do a direct model of propagation of seismic rays in the core, you find this type of residuals, so which are close to what I suppose could be seen from this data. This use of this models show interesting features like this one. If you just take, you put the axis of the anisotropy a few degrees away from the axis of rotation of the inner core, then the residual data looks like this. And it shows that we have to be careful. We didn't finish this study, this is our preliminary result, but you have to be careful using the seismological data, especially the error bars of the seismological data could be as informative than the curve itself. And this is also an easy model with two layers. One which is isotropic, actually this is almost no anisotropy, so the velocity is very varied in an uppermost layer, and a very anisotropic core, central core, and then you find this type of data, the colors meaning the different depths inside the inner core. So now I'd like to review very rapidly different mechanism which has been proposed to explain anisotropy in the core. So the first one, which has been described already, is to rely on the anisotropy which is present in the crystals and monocrystals. And as it was said, HCP is favored, even if some questions still are present. But there is other ways to, because as we know, the inner core presumably is not made of a monocrystal. So there is plenty of crystals, and we have to explain why the anisotropy emerged from the polycrystalline structure of the core. So there is two ways of making texture. One is using the crystallization process to orientate all crystals at the core, inner core boundary, and to preserve this anisotropy during all time life of the inner core. This could be made through dendrites and has been studied. For example, here this study by Bergman have shown that this is a solidification experiment. The inner core is here, and this is the inner core boundary growing into the time, and you can see dendrites, and the crystals of, in this case, salt water, are orientated and show solidification texturing. But you have another process which are able to produce the texture is by deformation. This is well known in rocks, like this one here. You have a plastic deformation or a recrystallization, which show a strong anisotropy. These two processes could be present in the core, but the one associated with deformation needs some motion inside the inner core. Three different motions, dynamics, geodynamics for the inner core dynamics perhaps, have been proposed. The first one is thermal convection in the inner core, was proposed by the Toulousain Weber and Mechtel in 92. And this is the M equal 1 thermal convective motions. Also, the magnetic field has been proposed by Kerato in 2000 and associated with the poloidal motion, associated with the toroidal magnetic field lines, the poloidal magnetic field lines. But this has been thought as too low motions to produce any deformation texturing. Toroidal motion has been proposed by Buffett, and this needs more studies to. And we will study that during the end of the thesis of ANOA. And the one I will focus today is the one associated with the differential growth of the inner core. This has been presented already by a speaker this morning. This model has been proposed in 96 by Yoshida and is based on the heat flux extracted from the inner core at the inner core boundary could be larger in the equatorial region than in the pole. So then the crystallization is larger in the inner equatorial belt, and the excess of mass should be released by a viscous deformation, where the mass at the equator is moving to the poles inside the core, the inner core. So this is a summary. Okay. Dynamical state of the inner core. So to understand better the geodynamics of the inner core, we have to understand the dynamical state of the inner core. So here is an example of a thermal history of the inner core. Take an inner core of 500 million years. Yeah, the age of the inner core is unknown, but this is for example. So at the birth of the inner core, which is zero in my time, the first... Oh yeah, that's already a problem, but the inner core form at the center of the Earth from the solidus. The solidus is this line. So here you have the radius in axis and the temperature in y-axis. So after 15 million years, this is the geotherm in black, and the geotherm meets the solidus at the inner core boundary, and you can see the time evolution of the geotherm, which the inner core cooled, the Earth cools down, and the inner core form due to this cooling. And today, you have a geotherm which crosses the solidus at the 1220 kilometers. So now we know the temperature of the inner core because we know that this temperature is at the solidus. And from this temperature, we are able to build the adiabatic temperature inside the inner core, which is this blue line, the adiabat. So now two questions. The geotherm could be above the adiabat, and then we have a super adiabatic regime which could lead to thermal convection. But you can also have the opposite, like this here, when if the time life of the inner core is 1.5 gigayears, then the geotherm is below the adiabat, and then no thermal convection can occur. So it is very important to know what controls the state, because here you can have thermal convection, here you cannot have thermal convection. So we found that the inner core cooling, its edge actually, is a key parameter to predict the dynamical state. And the inner core cooling, the edge of the inner core, is really dependent of two parameters: thermal conductivity of iron, which is the key parameter for the history of the inner core, and the heat flux at the CMB, which control the heat flux, the heat extracted from the core. So you can understand it here. If thermal conductivity is large, you have time during the age of the inner core to expel heat. If the thermal conductivity is low, then it's easy to be in the superadiabatic inner core. So to have thermal convection in the inner core, you need a very young inner core. How young? Okay, that's another question. So the edge of the inner core, critical edge, to see if there is thermal convection, could be given by this formula. And if you put numbers on this, we found that the critical edge of the inner core is 0.9 gigayear. And there is a large uncertainty on that, but okay, because there is large uncertainty on these parameters. If mineralogists give better value, we can do better easily. And it is controlled by the CMB heat flux. And the CMB heat flux give an age of the inner core of 0.6 if it's 12 terawatts to 2.3 gigayear if it's 4 terawatts. And there is large uncertainty also at the CMB heat flux. So we are able to produce such graphs where you have here the radius and here the edge of the inner core. As I said, the edge of the inner core is connected to the heat flux, okay? And I plot here two curves for two different heat conductivities of iron. If the inner core is very old, the inner core is stable. And if it's very young, it's unstable. Two heat conductivities have been published, only two, from my knowledge. One from Stacy and Anderson in 2001, which was very large, 79 watt per meter, which makes everybody believe that no thermal convection was possible in the inner core, because any inner core older than, let's say, 600 million years couldn't be dynamically unstable. And just published, and not really published, published in the book of Stacy, Physics of the Earth, which is not really, is this value, 36 watt, which is not a research paper. I mean, we don't know how he found this number. It's a review, but no reference to this number. So let me show what now I will show you. I will show you a sequence. We will concentrate on this new value, 36 watt per meter per Kelvin, and I will show you an unstable inner core first. So this is thermal convection in the inner core. So you have a view of this dynamical state regime here. So we are looking at an inner core of 900 million years with a viscosity of 10 to the 18 pascal second for this conductivity. You have the potential temperature, and here the azimuthal vorticity. And you have time, the beginning of the inner core age history, and the today. So I have a movie. We didn't see many movies today, so it's a good way to finish it. Okay, so you see the time evolution of the core. So at the beginning, because the core, the Rayleigh number is linked to the radius. So at the beginning of the inner core history, you cannot have thermal convection because the Rayleigh number is too small. And at a given age, the union core begins to evolve. You see a potential temperature. What is important here is see that's a very strange thermal convection because it's made of cold plumes. There is not hot plumes. It's made because of the crystallization and the cooling of the inner core from its surface, from the ICB, and produce very tiny cold plumes which go to cool down the center of the inner core. This is the way I see this movie. Okay, that's it. Okay, not twice. And if you can increase the viscosity of the inner core is clearly unknown, so we have to study different viscosity. But here it is interesting. It's m equal 1 motion, and this is was the motion studied by Machtel, very close to the onset of convection. So from this study, we could study scaling laws for the velocity, which are very small, actually, or the perturbation of temperature, which are linked to the Rayleigh number. And we found that it's between 0.1 K and 1 K. An interesting case is where the inner core is older, like 1.2, because you have first an unstable state and then a stable state. So you have a second movie where, so at the beginning, no convection, and then you reach the critical Rayleigh number, the m equal 1 motions, and then the plumes, and then you cross again the stable line because... okay. So that it is very interesting. With that, we call that a convective window. So we study that for different viscosities, 10 to the 17, 10 to the 18, 10 to the 19. And all these cases, we found that during the thermal convective window, you have a central part of the inner core, which is convective. And this could be the signature of an innermost inner core. This is another view for different CMB heat flux. Here you have a time window, convective time window. Here it's today convective again, but only in the central part. So this morning, this has been a translation of the inner core. How is this, do you connect that to convection? I want to tell you that this translation of inner core is present only for a rigid inner core. And this is very important to understand. This mechanism is associated with a rigid inner core. So you need a very large viscosity to this happen in the core. And then also you allow quick fusion and solidification. This is a necessity to have this mode present. And really, it is an Archimedean force. You have to understand this translation. You suppose the core cannot deform, it's a rigid body, and then you move it a little bit, and you have a difference between the center of mass and the center of temperature. And these two centers, because you have made a perturbation, these two centers produce an Archimedean force, like in thermal convection, and this force is used to translate the inner core. If you don't allow solidification and fusion, this will stop. So we can model that for a very large viscosity, third movie. Yeah. Wow. Yes. Very boring, okay? This is translation, okay? So, oops. But what is interesting, it is reduce the viscosity to enable to have translation and convection. And this is what we have done for moderate viscosity. So you will see that the translation takes place at the beginning, and then thermal convection. So this is the translation mode. Okay? So and you will see this is hot part. This will migrate. It's long. I don't know if you see it. Yeah, now you can see it. Here is the migration. And the translation is because of internal deformation. And you see the plumes, the scale of the plumes. So the convection makes this translation mode unstable. Okay. This is my summary for thermal convection in the core. Whole sphere convection with active cold, plumes, convective time window signature of the innermost inner core. Fusion and solidification may generate a translation regime for a very viscous inner core. And convection and translation may coexist. Outline. Now, I'd like to introduce stratification. So this has been shown. This is a diagram, a phase diagram, with a view from a geodynamicist, so very simplified, with a liquidus and a solidus. At a time equal t equals zero, the outer core has this concentration, C0, of a light element. I don't care which one. And then the temperature goes down by cooling and produce the inner core with a concentration of the light element in the inner core, which is KC0. And because the solidus, the inner core, is less concentrated in light element than the liquidus, the concentration in light elements increases during time, and the concentration of the liquid increases with time. So today, the concentration of light element inside the liquid core is higher than it was at the beginning of the inner core. And then, consequently, the concentration of light element in the inner core, which is KC, T, is now higher than it was before. So it means that the light element is more concentrated at the top of the inner core than it was at the center of the inner core. Yes. And if you put numbers and you try to do as the people in geochemistry community uses Rayleigh laws and such things, very difficult, then, and using alpha coefficient partition and sulfur and silicon, because oxygen is not interesting to do that, you find a delta rho of 5 kilograms by cubic meter between the center and the top of the inner core. It seems very low, but it has a dramatic effect on geodynamics. And we measure this using a dimensionless number. We love dimension numbers. So dimensionless numbers, we call it the buoyancy number. Okay? So with no buoyancy number, no stratification, B equals zero, we found the Yoshida model, where you have the differential growth, as I explained already, move. And when you do that, you produce texturing by stress tensors, but these stress tensors need a billion years to produce deformation texturing in the core. But, okay, so we introduce... we jump on that, okay. We are able to produce for this model P waves plots for different particles inside the inner core. And because this model the stress is very low, we can only produce 1% of anisotropy. So a way to increase the anisotropy inside the inner core is to use a crystallization anisotropy and then introduce at the top of the inner core materials which are highly anisotropic. So this anisotropy, crystallization anisotropy put at the top of the NOCO will be deformed and produce at the end a P waves anomaly velocity like this. It's better, but it's 1.5% anisotropy. So if we put that in the model, like I have shown at the beginning, we can see from the Yoshida model, the residual, seismological residual, we are expected from this model. So we see that we predict 0.4 to 0.5% of seismic residuals in time, 0.5% of the time propagation, and with different structures, and these are preliminary results, I will not comment them. But now, if you introduce stratification, then the stress, like in this case, where the buoyancy number stratification with a delta rho of 5 kilograms between the center and the top of the inner core, you can produce stress at the top of the inner core, which are very good. The deformation are so large that you produce a large texturing by deformation. So we do the same exercise, and we are able to produce with a stratified flow and solidification texturing at the top, we are able to produce a 3% anisotropy and in the central part too. Okay, so these are my conclusions. Stratification inhibits radial motions. I didn't say it, but this is a good way to say it. Superficial layer with large stresses. With no stratification, anisotropy is too small. Stratification and solidification texture could produce VP maps compatible with the seismic observations. Some perspectives. This one, I like it, is to mix stratification and thermal convection. As I said, you can have a convective time window. But if you add stratification to that, it's really easy to produce this time window. Because the materials, okay, this is a typical case. You have an inner core growing, you cross the critical onset of the Rayleigh number, and you start a convective motion with the m equal 1 first, and then the thermal plumes. But because the material... the material which crystallizes at the top of the inner core is lighter and lighter, it cannot participate to the thermal convection. So you form a layer at the top of the inner core, which is lighter, and you have a thermal convective state inside the inner core, and you have a layer which is stable at the top of the inner core. And this is clearly seen here in the azimuthal velocity. Okay, what else? No, nothing else. So thanks.